Transportation Finance and Policy Division is coming to order. Before we get started with bills, I first want to recognize Chair Leader, who's going to make some announcement.
Actually, members, in your packet, you've got the handout with all the stimulus. It basically shows how the stimulus applies to the monies. We've got a bill up today which really only shows, it authorizes the Department of Transportation to spend the money. It doesn't show numbers in it. And this basically shows some of the matching requirements and some of the federal requirements. This is put out by Mr. Burris and Glenn Ewers, so just for your information. The other thing is also you have a new ranking sheet. And if you could turn that in sometime to Abby tonight, today, tomorrow, sometime before, actually tomorrow noon would be fine, because we have to get a group of auditors to come in and make that put this together, you know. I'm thinking get the one that goes to where you fill out, you buy magazines, that same auditor group. That's okay. But other than that, we also have to clear the room because another committee comes in at 6:30, so we're going to have to cut. 6:30 or 6, Abby, what is it? Whatever it is, we got to get out of here so we won't be able to run overtime. And Mr. Chair, that's about the announcement.
Okay, any questions for Chair Leader regarding the announcement that he's made to us? Seeing none, we're going to move forward with our first bill. Representative Beard, would you like to move House File 1559?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1559, and I believe it will be laid over for possible inclusion in the recommendations of the Bonding Committee. Is that the proper motion?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
All right. Would you like to introduce the bill and then also...
Certainly.
Introduce your testifier.
Mr. Chairman and members, this is a bonding request from bond proceeds to be given to the Commissioner of Transportation to be sent to the Department of Aeronautics. Those of you that have been here a couple years, remember we had one of these requests in here for the Alexandria Air Traffic Control Radar Facility. A couple of years ago, that need is still there. And also, there is a situation in the city of Bigfork where they could tap the airport, state airport fund to rebuild extend and rebuild their runway for purposes of economic development. Mr. Chairman and members, I do have a testifier here with us that will talk about that in a little greater detail. So I think I'll ask we turn it over to him at this moment. And then I have a few more comments at the end, and we'll stand for questions.
That's fine. Please introduce yourself and let us know who you work for.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Ray Stege with Fort Elliott Hendrickson. The proposed legislation has two projects in it. The first project, as Representative Beard, mentioned, is the Alexandria Area Aircraft Surveillance Facility, and there is this is included in your packet, and this illustrates the gap that exists in radar coverage around the Alexandria area. It's bordered by Alexandria, Fergus Falls, Detroit Lakes, Park Rapids, Brainerd, and St. Cloud. The radar technology has been in effect since the start of World War II. The proposed equipment that would be put in at this location would provide those functions, plus it has broadcast capability. So what the controller sees, anyone having the reception equipment can also see the same thing. So another aircraft can see that snowfall on the clearing a runway at an airport. The second project is the Big Fork Airport. And the primary user is Berquist Company. They're a manufacturer of membrane switches. They have 124 full-time employees. Their Big Fork is located approximately halfway between Grand Rapids and International Falls. So they're a high-tech plant in the middle of the woods, as they call themselves, and they are outside of the Big Fork city limits. They own a turboprop aircraft that weighs slightly over 12,500 pounds gross weight, and they use that aircraft to fly in customers, engineers, and auditors, some of them coming from Europe. The population, as I mentioned, it's 124 full-time employees. The population of Big Fork is 468, so it's substantial employer for that region. We would request of the committee that this be laid over as Representative Beard has suggested. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee of either Representative Beard or the testifier? Seeing that,
One follow-up comment, if I may. First of all, these two items have been included in the Senate bonding language, so it's already moving well in the Senate. I request your support as you rank the projects to include this. Both of these projects are ready to go. Some of it will be shovels in the ground, some of it will be slide rule type people, but they're all good folks and they're all ready to go to work on these projects. I should also just point out that twice in the last 6 years, the legislature has what I call raided the airport fund. The airport fund is set aside from user fees, solely and entirely user fees, just to do these exact kind of projects. These projects have gone begging over the last 6 years because for general fund purposes we've taken the airport fund and spent it on other things to help solve deficit problems and so on and so forth. So I think it would be a fair play, certainly, to actually bond for these and build these projects and count that as part of the payment back towards the $15 million that's gone missing here these last couple of years. So with that, members, I'd either stand for questions or ask for your support.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, would you like to renew your motion, Representative Beard?
Chairman, I do request that the bill be laid over for probable inclusion in the bonding recommendations.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have to vote for that.
Thank you for your deputy.
Thank you so much for you just engaging me. I sincerely appreciate it. I just wanted to make sure that you all were listening as well. Thank you, Representative Beard. As Chair Leader gets ready to take the podium, I understand that we do have a quorum, and I would entertain a motion for someone to accept or to approve the minutes from March 12, 2009.
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Newton. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. Chair Leader, would you like to introduce House File 1608?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1608 be laid over for consideration in the bond bill, in the capital investment bill.
Okay. So, Chair Leader, would you like to talk about your bill, and let's go forward.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1608 deals with local road and bridge bonds. And as you know, we have a local road and bridge bond bill every year. And I think before I start out, I should also say that Representative Hausman isn't here yet, but apparently the supplemental budget, if you want to call it that, from the governor came out today, and it would appear that there's not, let's see, it would appear that the governor recommends as high as only $120 million in bonding. So you can see anything we're looking at in here is going to be pretty tough for all the bonding requests we have. So it's critical that you feel. If I can make a pitch for fill out those rankings that we have, Mr. Chair. But anyhow, in the bill we provide for bonding for local bridges, and local bridges are those bridges that are off the basically off the federal highway system. And they're usually on a township and county, straight county road. And what it provides for, the state aid division has a local bridge listing every year. They're up to date. We've looked at that, and we see roughly how much they need, or what they say would be shovel ready. And the numbers we have may not kind of coincide, but the bond committee will determine that. We also have a provision, and that actually takes care of any bridge basically that has a sufficiency rating of less than 50 and a traffic count from zero to whatever. And also in part of the bill is the local roads portion for a local road improvement program, which is has two parts. It has local roads for safety monies and also bridge and rehabilitation, I'm having problems there. But the numbers that we have in this bill, probably just as well not to repeat, because they aren't going to be the exact, the numbers we're going to end up with. They're in there because we had put some numbers in, and that's a number that apparently would work out pretty well, but we don't have that kind of money, so we won't even have to talk about the numbers, because the numbers would be put in by the bond committee to fit in with the total bond bill. And basically, Mr. Chair, that's it. I do have someone from State Aid, Mr. Jonas. Rick Jonas is around. Jonas is around, in case you want him to testify. We also have Mr. Vanasic from the association, from counties, intercounty association, would try to care to testify.
Would you like for them to testify? If so, they can come forward now.
Yeah, probably. I believe Mr. Jonas is here just in case we need him, but that's fine if you want to testify.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify who you are and who you work for.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Bob Vanasic, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and would just like to note there's also a number of other organizations that are here today as well in support of this bill. I'll be very brief. I want to speak to the need to continue investing in Minnesota's local bridge infrastructure. The legislature has long recognized this and has historically authorized bonds for the local bridge repair and replacement program. The program is successful because there's criteria in place for identifying which bridges need repair or replacement, and that criteria is followed. The money you authorize gets spent, deficit bridges get repaired or replaced. The local road improvement program has not been around for as long as the bridge program, but it has also been very successful in providing funds for badly needed projects. I hope that you look favorably upon this request for bonding authorization. Thank you.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one question, and that is, are there any assurances in this bill that the money is going strictly towards the roads and bridge projects, that it's not going to any aesthetically pleasing roadside beautification plan sort of a thing?
To a leader or a testifier?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, it's dispersed to the Department of State Aid, and they have to have plans and approvals by the State Aid, so it definitely goes to where it's supposed to go. It can't be diverted.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, Chair Leader, I'm sorry.
I have a question for Mr. Jonas, if he's going to, I think he's going to.
Representative Magnus?
Yeah, he couldn't testify. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please identify yourself for the committee and who you work with.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rick Jonas, and I'm Deputy Director of the State Aid Division. Our division administers both the local road improvement program and the local bridge replacement program. I would just like to talk about the first part of the bill here. As far as the appropriation and the bonding bill, that was not part of the governor's budget as such, and so I can answer questions about those programs, but I'm not here really to talk about those. But the first paragraph, I think, is significant, and I'd like you to be aware of this paragraph that was put in the bill, fracture critical bridges. Of course, we know what this means now, and there are around 100 fracture critical bridges on our local road system. Many of them are on low volume situations, but they are used by the traveling public here on public rights of way. Replacement of bridges, load posting of bridges, and legal use of bridges requires several pieces of engineering judgment as to the condition of the bridge. The design fracture critical bridges have been around for a long time. These fracture critical bridges, many of them were built 50 years ago, and they've been serving totally fine. If they've been maintained, painted regularly, they're in good condition. They're not necessarily in need of replacement. There are worse bridges on the local road system than fracture critical. However, with the attention on fracture critical bridges, we've now had to step up the pace on inspecting those bridges and inspecting the gusset plates on those bridges. These inspections are extremely costly, and we're doing that. And I would say in the last 2 years, and with this coming year, we probably are outlaying well in excess of $1 million just in inspections of these fracture critical bridges on behalf of the locals. What this paragraph does is it allows the counties to regardless of any other situation, if they feel it's appropriate to replace a fracture critical bridge, it allows them to do so, even if the bridge would appear to be adequate for its current use. It's an enabling decision to get them out from underneath the burden if they're finding that the inspection costs versus the benefit makes replacement or repair a better option. They don't currently have that option right now. This is a good change in the use of the funds, and I hope that moves forward.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Jonas, that was one of the questions I had, is how many are on the backlog. But could you tell us the estimated cost of fixing those 100 or so bridges? As an estimate?
Mr. Jonas?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, Representative Leader has an answer.
Chair Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Magnus. We went through the list, and the bridges that basically are ready to go, the average cost of those bridges is $188,000. That's the average cost of all the bridges in there.
Chair Representative Magnus, last year we replaced 14 fracture critical bridges for almost $16 million of bond funds. That was in last year's construction program. That would be, those are probably a little larger bridges than what we have currently on the list. Now, the 100 bridges that are on the local system, not all of them are in need of replacement. There's probably 20 or 30 that are on a replacement list somewhere. This legislation offers up the opportunity that some of these local agencies that are not eligible to repair or replace these bridges with other funds could make a decision and try to get out from under this. In some cases, it's $500,000 per bridge to inspect the gutter plates, and that's quite an expense if you're going to be incurring that every certain number of years, 3 years, 5 years.
Well,
follow up,
Mr. Chairman, and that leads to my next question. I think I heard you say it cost in excess of $1 million a year to inspect the bridges. I don't believe you'll be able to use these funds, though, to do that. Do you have adequate funds someplace else? Where are you getting the funds for the annual inspections, and can we help somehow with that?
Mr. Jonas? Mr. Chair, with Representative Magnus, we've been very fortunate in the cooperation with the Federal Highway Department, and we've been picking up close to 80% of the money for the inspection from Federal Highway, and then we've been matching with our state aid administration account and making the money available. MnDOT's bridge office has also been providing technical assistance. We've been able to do this outside of the normal county inspection program on behalf of the counties and townships and cities.
Thank you. That's it.
Any other questions? Representative Dickey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be a question for Chairman Leader. Is this fund for the local roads and bridges, is it available for all over the state? It's not just a certain area. And MnDOT is going to be taking a look at everything around the state. Is that correct?
Chair Leader.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's correct. It's for all the states. Each county has every year they resubmit their list as far as needs go, and then they're reprioritized. And as long as I have the thing for Representative Magnus, that was the average cost of 61 bridges for $188,000 each bridge. As Mr. Jonas pointed out, most of the big ones are out of the way. So this is probably an average for small ones.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none. Is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against House File Number 1608? CNN, Chair Little, would you like to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion that House File 1608 be laid over for possible inclusion into the capital investment bill.
Okay, House File 1608 will be held over. Now we would like to go forward with House File Number 1804. Chairleader, would you like to move?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House File 1804 for possible inclusion in the capital investment bill.
Okay, so move. Chairleader, would you like to speak to your bill?
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1804 deals with Greater Minnesota Transit bonds, and what it does, it provides $22 million in general obligation bonds, which appropriates them through the Department of Transportation to the rural transit. And we have a testifier, Mr. Chair, that...
All right. Yeah. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and who you work for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tony Kellen. I'm the president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association. I'm employed as the director of operations and technology at Metro Bus in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I do have a handout. I have 30 copies here. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today and have your consideration of inclusion of some of these projects or all of these projects in the capital investment bonding bill. The Public Transit Association in Minnesota has become much more active in the last 3 or 4 years in bringing forward projects as an association that sometimes don't, because of the processes that are in place, get to the legislature. I wanted to say thank you for the last couple of bonding cycles, the money that has been appropriated. In 2008, last year in conference, we received $1 million. That money has been obligated, and facilities are either under construction or getting under construction to facilities. And I'll hand out a list later that shows you those projects. In 2006, Greater Minnesota state bonds were used to do $2,500,000 in projects. Went to a total of 8 systems in Greater Minnesota. So prior to 2006, the previous time that Greater Minnesota received any bonding for facilities was in during the Ventura administration, and that particular bill was line item vetoed. There was $2 million for Greater Minnesota facilities in that bill. Prior to that, the last time was 1995. Mm-hmm. So we certainly appreciate your consideration today. The list that I've provided is actually a bit more than the $22 million that is identified in the bill. I just wanted to provide a list so you could see those. The largest, obviously, was the City of Rochester. That's a $50 million project that involves a joint public works facility as well as a transit operations and garage and facility. Currently, the City of Rochester parks a number of their public transit buses outside. The second and third projects are a CNG fueling station at Metrobus in St. Cloud. The third is the monies to do parking lot improvements, park and ride improvements for the I-94 and Highway 10 park and rides for North Star. There is currently today no money set aside to do that. The remaining projects are transit garage and operations facilities for multi-county systems, and then a few smaller projects in Northfield and the City of Mankato. So I'd be happy to take any questions that the committee might have at this time.
Any questions of the committee? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, how many outstate Greater Minnesota transit systems are there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scott, there are 66 systems in Greater Minnesota. 66 contracts, actually 63 systems outside of the Seven County metro area.
Any other questions? Is there anyone else who wants to testify for against House File number 1804? CNN, Chairleader, would you like to renew your motion?
I renew my motion to House File 1804. Recommended to be laid over for consideration in the capital investment.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairleader. It will be held over. We are now going to House File number 1333. House File number 1333. And I would like for someone on the committee to move House File Number 1333. Representative Morgan has so moved. So it is before
Mr. Chair.
Representative Morgan.
Where am I moving that, by the way?
Well, thank you. It is just before the committee. Now, this particular bill is going to be recommended to be passed and returned to the Finance Committee.
Okay, then that's what I'll do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Okay, Representative Gardner, the bill is before. Please tell us about the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Representative Morgan, and I occasionally switch off to see if anyone can tell the difference. Mr. Chair, this bill gives authority to the Mid-Council for regional transit bonding. It's something that's been done either on an annual or biannual basis for many years to provide necessary funding for key assets like buses and other assets used by the transit system. And I've got Judge Shetner for the Mid-Council who can give you some more details.
Okay. Please welcome, first of all. Identify yourself and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetner. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. As Representative Gardner mentioned, this is an annual request that the Metropolitan Council brings to the legislature. What we have before you is a request for $34.2 million in regional bonding authorization, which allows the council, as part of our regional property tax, we use these monies to be able to build or to purchase buses, build park and rides, our bus garages, do capital repairs, and buy equipment for the Metro Transit bus system. Since a number of the bus-related capital items are not, they don't have a 30-year lifespan, we're not able to use general obligation bonds, so the legislature years ago gave us the authority to use these regional transit bonds, and they are only for capital purposes. And one of the other things that is really important about these bonds is that we use these as a local match to a number of the federal dollars that we receive for bus replacements and other capital-type purposes. In your, there's a handout that actually explains some of our bond requests going years back. In 2008, last year, we received $66.6 million worth of authority. 2007, we requested 33.2, but there wasn't a tax bill. That's why you saw that we received the additional or the higher amount in 2008 and so on. So, again, this is a regular bill the council has before you. It generally goes to the tax committee and is included in the public finance article of the tax bill. I'm here to answer any questions, and Arlene McCarthy, who works with the Metropolitan Council, is here as well. And I'd also like to let you know that these bonds aren't just for Metro Transit. They also help provide the capital for Metro Mobility, for the opt-out transit providers, for our community-based transit, and Metropolitan Council. So Representative Beard, this helps the folks in your area with the Shakopee service, and basically any type of service that we have in the Metropolitan area, we use these bonds to help with our replacement for our buses or to build park and rides and whatnot. But we need to have the authority in hand so that we can enter into a contract in order to do a large-scale bus procurement or to build a park and ride. So that, again, I know we've been here many times before, but if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer those if you'd like. And Representative Hausman did ask me a question just moments before before I came down here and asked if this is a property tax increase. And it is not. There is by no means a property tax increase in here. The council has had a position with the administration that we do not raise property taxes, and we have not done that since 2003. And what we do, we levy on an annual basis about $70 million in property tax, and we manage our levies all as one. And what we've been doing, you've been seeing, we've been taking small steps every year as far as what we request from the legislature, and that's basically a 1% increase based on the growth in the region. So overall, the tax is flat.
Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr.
Shetton, and Met Council has been very helpful with the new park and ride at, I think we call it Blue Lake, in Shakopee and Prior Lake at Shepherd of the Lake. Fine job there. Just to clarify for the members of the committee, though, a few moments ago we heard that the governor is indicating he wants about $120 million in bonding. This does not count towards that cap, just to be clear, so we're not concerned about that.
No, that's fine. Testify? Mr. Chair, Representative Beard is correct.
Representative Mason?
Just clarification, the handout that you have here said bonds are repaid with property taxes levied by the council within the transit taxing district. And I thought you said that there wasn't any, was it just the fact that you're saying there's no increase in property tax, but there is property tax involved in this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, that is correct. We pay the debt service through that property tax for the bonds that we issue through this legislation. We've been doing it for years.
Any follow-up?
No.
Representative Hulbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and my comments are to Representative Hausman. I'm glad that she's here at this point, but with the transportation bill passing and the prior bill that we heard about general fund bonding for transit capital in greater Minnesota, I'm just wondering if there's some opportunity for some parity here and maybe looking at the projects that my council, I know we can't use general fund bonding for buses, but if in fact part of this money's going for infrastructure costs, and if we're going to bond in the bonding bill for greater Minnesota transit, if there might be some way to reduce the bonding amount or allow for more buses and allow for some general fund bonding for capital, to try and sort that out so that we have some standard across the state as far as what the state's going to pay for infrastructure and what locals are going to be required to pay for.
Representative Hausman?
Yes, Mr. Chair, obviously that's why I wanted to be, this is property taxes. In other words, if you're in the transit taxing district, you're going to pay for transit purchase of buses on your property tax. The other bill just went to steel bonding, so that would count.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, the previous bill was just for greater Minnesota transit capital improvements, and the point I'm trying to make is that we know that the Met Council can't use general fund bonding to buy buses, but if in fact part of this money is going to be used for items that are general fund bondable, then I'm hoping that the bonding committee will look at that as well as the tax committee or whoever and try and have some consistent policy across the state that if we're paying for bus garages in Rochester, why with general fund state money, why are we paying for bus garages with property taxes in the metro? And that's just a question that I think should just be addressed in this session as we move forward.
Representative Hausman?
I would agree with Representative Hulbert.
Any other questions for, Representative Stevenson?
Well, and to that point, Mr. Chair, and Representative Fulbert, maybe we could get a briefing then on how much money is taken out of the general fund that goes towards operating of the bus services in the metro area. I mean, that's the question for outstate as well. I mean, I understand that there's a transit levy that's levied. There's still a large amount of money that is subsidized on mass transit in the metro area that comes out of the general fund. And if there's indeed an equation that's going to be brought to bear, all of that needs to be included in that.
I can appreciate that, but I think we need to have a standard policy across the state, and if we want to go down that road, we can talk about things like jobsies, ethanol subsidies, if you want to look at where money goes across the state, as far as the budget as a whole, I'm happy to go there, but I do believe in the area of transportation. If we are in fact one state with an integrated transportation system, as we watch transit lines cross over the 7-county metro area, one in particular that you supported very heavily, we can't continue to have this system that's so segmented and has policies that make no sense anymore in how we fund things.
And I don't know if we are planning on having, you know, a briefing on that, and maybe I missed it, but in terms of the overall revenues that come from the transit levy, I know that, you know, I don't know that we've had in this committee, we've had a briefing on how much of the transit levy is on the local property tax and how those revenues are distributed, but in terms of transit, I would be interested in hearing it, maybe not the rest of the committee, but I would.
Well, Representative Stevenson, let me say that I'm sure the chair would take that under advisement, and he'll make sure that we are provided with information that we need in order to go forward. But I would like for us to proceed, if we might, with those in front of us, unless there's someone around the table or even chair leader that would like to speak to Representative Stevenson's issue.
I have another question.
Representative Dickey.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. As a new member to the House, I noticed on your report that you passed out that we, last year, we appropriated $56.6 million to the Metropolitan Council for transit funding. Could you explain to me what that $66 million went for? Just give me an idea of how we spent that money.
Chair and Representative, what the bill does and what the $66.6 million allowed us to do, that was a two-year authorization we received to make up for the 2007 session when there wasn't a tax bill. So we received a two-year authorization, and what that allows us to do is that when we do have a large-scale bus procurement, or if we're building a park and ride facility, or we're putting in kiosks, and I mean there's some major heavy capital cost in there, what we have to do is have the authorization in hand so that we can go out and have have that or let that contract, because oftentimes we have to have more than 1 year's authority to do some of those things. So that $66.6 million is basically programmed into our capital improvement program at the council, and what we need now is this next year's authority so we can continue that going into the next 18 months or 2 years, that we have to start programming our buses, because our buses, for instance, have a 12-year lifespan. By the federal government has said that they have a 12-year lifespan. So what we have to do is start getting authorization in hand so we can enter contracts for these large-scale procurements so that we can basically have those contracts let. I'm trying to figure out if I can explain that any more clear, but we need the authority in hand before we can enter the contracts, is basically.
I understand that.
Representative.
Thank you. Just one more question. So do we have anything left from the $66 million? And if we don't, that I assume that's still debt, and then we're adding another $45 million. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what it is authorization. We only issue so much debt when, in a way that we keep our property taxes flat. Mm-hmm. So every year we retire roughly the equivalent of what we are seeking at the legislature. So this is kind of a revolving cycle that every year we come back looking for it, because we're retiring a similar amount of that debt. So, you know, we have to come back and ask for additional authority every year so that we can continue entering the contracts for, again, whatever procurement we're doing, so we can enter into those contracts. And if we don't get that that ongoing authorization, we basically run into a cliff where we don't have enough authorization, and then we get hung up on whether or not we're able to enter into some sort of contract to do a large-scale bus purchase, or to build this parking lot, or to do a garage of some sort.
One more question. Thank you very much. I appreciate the committee's patience in letting me understand this. How much did you retire on the debt in the last go-around?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I am not our CFO. I would be happy to provide a letter to the entire committee explaining what we retired. I just don't have that for you today.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Great. Any other questions from the committee? If not, it's my understanding we have another testifier, James Clark.
Yep.
Mr. Clark, please identify yourself for the record and also let us know who you work for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. James Clark with Metro and Kramer, representing the Suburban Transit Association. And just wanted to add to the testimony already given that the suburban transit providers are very supportive of this legislation. This is how we, too, receive the money for bus replacement and also for a great amount of the park and ride and other facilities that service the suburban providers, including MBTA, Shakopee Transit, Maple Grove Transit, Plymouth Transit, Prior Lake, and Southwest Transit. So we, too, are very supportive of this legislation, and thank Representative Gardner for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Clark? If not, is there anyone else who wishes to testify for or against House File 1333? Seeing none, I am sure that Representative Morgan would like to renew his motion, which is recommended to pass House File 1333 and for it to return to the Finance Committee. Are you continuing that motion, Representative Morgan?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevail. Thank you. Next, we're going to House File number 1373, and it's my understanding, Representative Gardner, you're going to stay with us. And I need someone to move House File number 1373.
I'll move that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein moves House File number 1373. It's before us. It is also my understanding that there's an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I just had an author's amendment, which adds one more person on this council, the H-1373-A1 amendment.
And just for one moment before I take a vote on that, I just want to clarify what Representative motion is. It's recommended for House File number 1373 to pass and return to Finance with a recommendation for re-referral the State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections Committee. That is a long one, wouldn't you agree? But I think we got it. That's Representative Hornstein's motion. The amendment is before us. All those in favor of the amendment? Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, okay. Motion carries. Now the amendment is before us. The bill is in the shape that you like. Would you please proceed by informing the committee about the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill that Senator Dibble and I are working on is to create a Minnesota Council on Transportation Access to deal with a high level of cost for transit for people who don't have access to a car that is not mass transit, and also to provide better service. As many of you in the Metro know, we might call this Metro Mobility or Dial Ride Service. In Greater Minnesota, you'll see transit services, van pools, or small buses that are not on fixed routes that are used to pick up people to and from senior residences. I have a group house on my block where vans and a bus pick up adults with developmental disabilities and take them to their place of work every day. The problem is we have a lot of fleets which are all funded by different programs, sometimes from different federal programs, and there's 62 different federal funds that could be used to fund this kind of work. But we have a lot of silos, so we have a lot of organizations which are overlapping in their service areas. There's a GAO report on this from the federal government. There's a one-page map in your packet. From that report, that just shows a map from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which shows an example on how you can have a lot of overlapping routes to serve pretty much the same type of audience. And so we're expending a lot of public dollars in a way that is not as efficient as it could be. This kind of transit is also more expensive than mass transit. In the metro area here, on something like a dial-a-ride service, the cost, the true cost of providing that service to seniors and the disabled is often in excess of $20 one way per ride, which is about four or five times more expensive as the actual cost for mass transit. But there actually is an interagency group that is working under executive order to try and help agencies coordinate their efforts to help provide more efficiency, and that is the Interagency Committee on Transit Coordination, with several departments and the Committee on Disabilities taking part on that. What this bill would do is pretty much raise that to a higher level, so that council, which is made up of some of the folks who help direct some of these programs, can all be on the same page. And it could be regionalized, so you might have a metro-wide group that helps coordinate that kind of transit here in the metro area. You could also have regional boards, or regional groups that actually could help coordinate it in specific areas of the state outside the Twin Cities metro area. An example of a type of efficiency might be where a user uses one phone line to reach a universal dispatcher who can help find the right ride at the right time from the right provider, instead of having to give people a runaround where you call one provider and you get one answer and they say, well, we can pick you up tomorrow at 12:30, but you need to get somewhere earlier than that, and then I give you a number for another provider that might be able to get you there. So an example of this coordination, if the Council on Transportation and Access succeeds, might be to make it simpler for residents to call this one number. And I'd love to, I don't have specific numbers on how much money we could save, but this council is modeled on a Florida council, which has managed to increase efficiency, reduce the number of denied rides based on availability of the assets and funding. So I think it's a good way to proceed. The amendment actually adds one additional member to this council, which is the Minnesota Public Transit Association. There's also another item, front and back page in your packet, that is from the National Council of State Legislatures, which lists some observations as they've surveyed other states to see what works and what doesn't. And one of their suggestions is that we go beyond what we currently have. We have this interagency committee that was created by executive order. The NCSL observation is that executive orders kind of fade out after a while with changes in administration, and so having some sort of legislative direction would be more helpful and more permanent. Mr. Chair, that's kind of the scope of the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I think, as I've described this bill to others, I usually find that they latch onto it a little bit and would like to focus on a particular part of the bill.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee of Representative Gardner? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, I see there's a $300,000 fiscal note on this, and does that include compensation for these members that are on this committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Scott, that would certainly not be my intention. These folks are all, almost all, currently state employees already. So I certainly would object if we had a group of people saying, boy, let's have some per diem rates or whatever it is for serving on the council. And as I say, there is an interagency committee meeting now that's already comprised of many of these folks. We would raise it up. We're adding some folks. Turns out that the Veterans Affairs Department in D.C. funds a lot of these types of programs for people to get to and from veterans hospitals, so I added Veterans Affairs. Education, we've got bus fleets like crazy in Minnesota, and some of those assets for accessible buses sometimes are idle, so we'd like to make sure that the education folks are there. In terms of savings for the dollars we're spending, I meant to mention this. I have a problem, and maybe members can help me figure this out. You cannot find line items for the expenses we're spending on this now in existing budgets, because you might have a DV waiver for it's paid for through the Health and Human Services budget, which can be paying for this kind of service, but you don't know for sure. And so we don't have any breakdown of the itemized expenses of what different agencies are spending for transportation, and that's one of the things I'd like the council to help figure out, and then we can figure out, all right, for action A, we save this much money, or we increase efficiency or wait times for seniors or people with disabilities by a certain amount. But we won't know until they are able to get together and get some data.
Chair Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is the Finance Division, and there's a fiscal note on it. And Representative Gardner, that does affect, it's general fund money, so it affects our target. So when we get into the big finance committee, that may have some bearing on what's going on. I think that's a question you had, Representative Scott.
Mr. Chair and Chairleader, and this has been part of my problem, is I think we would save money out of Representative Huntley's committee, for example, but I won't know until I can get, you know, get at that finance level, and then people would say, oh, okay, this would save me money over here. And we might actually take a load off of his burden, his target. So your guidance here would certainly be helpful.
Yep. Chairleader? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Gardner, maybe you should work that out by the time you get in finance committee. That might make it easier to sell, because it does affect the target, or it would affect our target, basically. And we don't have any general funds in this target, basically.
Yeah. Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair and Chairleader, I'll take that under advisement and get with some folks.
I'm sorry. Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gardner, I heard the word that you're seeking counsel. I'll offer you just a little bit.
Please.
You may want to take a couple dollars out of your pocket and buy the guy at Petro Mobility lunch someday and ask him how that worked out when we we did something like this in the metropolitan area back in the mid-90s with the best of intentions. And, Lordy, we almost had people freezing to death because, for some reason, it seemed like a good idea to launch this whole initiative in February of that one winter. We wish we could rethink that whole thing. But you may want to chat those folks up before you move ahead. They may have some ideas. I think Met Council or MTC actually controls that program on just how much money we did or didn't save, how all the missteps that were created there and the angst that was created before we, with the best of intentions, we tried to help these good folks. Just a thought.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I appreciate it. I don't really want to reinvent the wheel, especially in February.
Mm-hmm.
Although I will say, even today, I've had people in my office who are in a wheelchair who live in Washington County and have literally been dropped at the county line to wait for a bus from another county, and it would seem better to have some seamless transitions there. And I used to work in a solid waste industry, and transportation is more than half the cost. No one ever wants a recycling truck or a garbage truck, or anybody in the airline industry doesn't want a half-empty plane because you're just paying to ship air. And if we can figure out a way to limit that without treating people like cattle, I think that would be good. But I definitely want to learn from what worked and what didn't work.
Representative Magnus?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gardner, I'm not clear on this in the appropriation. Is the appropriation $300,000 from each fiscal year at 10 and 11, or is it from 300 total? In which year is it coming in? Is it
Representative Gardner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, well, if it's not clear, it's not clear. Would you...
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if you want to say, for example, 100. If it's a one-time $300,000, if $300,000 is the total amount, I don't know. It might be. It's clear to me if you say $150,000 from each year. Does that make some sense, or is that,
Mr. Chair?
Right now, it doesn't really say which year you're going to.
Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus, that would be fine, and maybe Mr. Burris could help me wordsmith that a little bit.
If I might defer to staff. Corinne? Matt Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, the question before the committee appears to be whether $300,000 is the total amount, and one suggestion that's been raised is breaking that up to be $150,000 per year. $300,000 is the total amount. $150,000 per fiscal year for fiscal years 2010 and 2011. The alternative approach would be keep it at a full $300,000, but clarify that it would be for both fiscal years. And the difference between those two would be whether you want to provide some flexibility in crossing over fiscal years in when expenses and budget is necessary for the LCC. As far as language, it would be a little bit dependent on which of those two approaches you want to take.
Representative Gardner?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I understand, the total would be $300,000. I'm just fine with making it $150,000 each for each year. And if someone says, oh boy, we need more paper clips, you know, on the first year, well, okay, well, we can deal with that later. But
Absent any direction from Chair Leader. What I'm going to suggest is that you definitely want to get that language clarified, especially if it clears this committee and before it gets to the Finance Committee, because the Finance Committee will ask for some clarity.
Mr. Chair, excuse me. Would you...
And they would also have to know, and I stand corrected, that's going to go to state and local government operations reform and technology and elections after it goes to finance. But the fiscal note needs to be clarified and just all of those things. So, and I would suggest that that happens before it gets to finance.
Well, Mr. Chair, I know Representative Magnus isn't a fan of people saying let's fix it later, so I don't know if he would like me to fix it now. And I actually wondered if we might create the motion just to have it go to finance, because I wouldn't stay there, because I'd like to talk to Representative Huntley in particular, see if it would go to his committee. But
that's fine. Would you like to clarify the language now? Or
Mr. Chair and Chair Leader and Gardner, the fiscal note in itself is clear, but I think you'd be well advised to say take it for biennium, because unless we pass legislation say you can carry over the balance in 150, at the end of the year you'd have some problem if you run out of money. It'd be better to run out of money at the end of the second year rather than in the middle of the biennium.
Anything else?
That'd be the only comment I would represent, Gardner. I think if you have a chance on that fiscal note. Yeah.
Any other questions from the committee? Anyone in the audience wants to testify for or against House File Number 1373? Seeing none, I believe that Representative Hornstein renews his motion for House File Number 1373 as amended, passed, and returned to the Finance Committee. Is that so?
Yes, correct.
All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Say nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would now like to turn your attention to House File Number 809. Representative Hornstein. Representative Hornstein, once you are settled, if you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'd like to have House File 809 pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee.
And it's my understanding that there's a fiscal note?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just and members, to refresh the committee's memory. We heard this bill and we heard testimony on this a couple of weeks ago, and it was laid over to await a fiscal note, which you have in your packets. But this fiscal note is now likely rendered mute because we have an agreement between myself, the advocates of this bill, and the Met Council to attempt a pilot project that can get at the goals of the legislation that will likely be revenue neutral. This is in process. We know it'll be completed by the time we get to the Finance Committee, but it's possible maybe, I don't know if Mr. Shetman is still here. And I want to use this opportunity also to just express my public appreciation for Mr. Shetman and the Met Council and their really great work in trying to meet some of the needs that have been expressed here. Really shown a lot of flexibility and good problem-solving skills. And so that's why we're here today, I think, with an agreement.
Welcome to the committee again, Mr. Shetman. Would you like to...
Sure. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. And Representative Hornstein is correct. We do have, we are in the process of putting together an amendment that will create a pilot project that the council will be able to work with up to 10 charitable organizations that work with the homeless. And I apologize. We had every intention to have that done today. We were a little sidetracked with a presentation we had to make with, to the Senate this afternoon, so I apologize for that. But we anticipate it will come back with a revenue-neutral fiscal note. So we are putting the finishing touches on that, and as Representative Hornstein asked, I too would ask if we would allow this bill to move on, and we would be able to have that updated fiscal note and the amendment that should make this bill revenue-neutral and be able to meet some of the, I guess, what the folks in St. Stephen's and the advocates are looking for and Representative Hornstein are looking for as far as trying to extend a greater handout to some of those more disadvantaged folks and see what we can do here. And the council's committed to doing that, and appreciate your support for the bill. I wish I had the language for you, but I don't. I apologize.
Any questions of Representative Hornstein or Mr. Shetman from the committee? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a project I very much support, but I don't have a clue how where are we going with transit operating. I haven't looked at the governor's budget that just came out today, but I, of course, would put enough money in to fully fund bus operations and all the needs for those people trying to go to job interviews when they have no car, but help me.
Okay. Mr. Chair, did you want to start
or
follow up? Or?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, you know, we're obviously very concerned about, right now, I believe we're at a $62.4 million shortfall and for the biennium. And we're working with the Met Council and working with our Senate counterparts and colleagues over here to make sure that we can hold transit harmless in this difficult year so that there's no service cuts and no you know, budget cuts, basically to maintain the level of service we have now. And so there are a number of ideas the Met Council has put forward, some of which I find you know, very helpful. Others I think need a little work, or we may need to talk about a different year, a different day. You know, I think there are some solutions on the table, and you know, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee is asking for those. And you know, again, we'll try to take Mr. Shetman's ideas, you know, that any member of the committee may have, ideas from our Senate counterparts, and put together a proposal that I hope will alleviate this $62.4 million hole that we're facing.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd be curious about the timetable for that, and maybe I'm looking at Representative Leader. I mean, obviously, we're just a week or so away. we're facing the deadlines, and we know there are only cuts. There are no spending increases at anybody's budget, no matter who's writing it. And we know in transportation, because most of it is dedicated funding, this is the only big item, really, I think. And so I'm just wondering when we, I don't know if there are bills, I don't know how we're going to get a solution before us. I have one, but nobody likes mine.
Yeah. Representative Hornstein or Mr. Shetman, would you like to respond to Representative Hausman's concerns?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, yes, I think, like in any situation, there would have to be some bills, and you know, we have some deadlines approaching for finance ideas, and again, I think in a general way that the chair of the Ways and Means Committee is soliciting ideas, but yeah, I would imagine, yes, we're going to have some specific legislation. Again, I know that one idea is already being introduced, and others will follow.
If I might, just because time is of the essence, and I, unless there's something you would like to add that hasn't been articulated.
No, Mr. Chair and members, I think Representative Hausman's right. I mean, this bill is part and parcel of you know, a much larger issue that we have to face. I'm just really grateful that even in this challenging time, we're able to reach an agreement and work cooperatively with the Met Council so that at least some people will be able to access transit services that need them desperately in order to become self-sufficient. And you know, this bill, members, makes a real difference in people's lives, and that's why I support it. And I also, again, a special thank you to Representative Beard, who's a co-author and has also helped to do some problem solving here. So I would, again, seek your support. I don't think we really need anything else. So we have our advocates from Mr. Lang is here and others who you've met, and if you have any specific questions of them, but I know that they testified earlier. So, you know, with that, Mr. Chair, I think, you know, we're done in terms of our testimony.
Chair Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, the Finance Committee has another week. Would you probably be good to consider laying this over, because we wouldn't have to debate it much if it comes back in? I think there's a little discomfort as far as sending a bill out that's not really put all together.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I don't even think we would need to, and Representative Leader, I don't think we'd even need to lay this over a week. I'm told that the language could be completed by Thursday. Okay, so, you know, Mr. Chair, it would be up to sort of it'd be up to you and our support folks to see if that would fit in on Thursday. Otherwise, we could do it, you know, whenever there's an appropriate time for the committee. But certainly in less than a week, it's my understanding, we could have the language to you.
Thank you, Representative Hartman. We will lay the bill over until Thursday.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. All right, committee, I'd like for you to turn your attention to House File Number 1797. And Chair Leader, once you're ready, if you'll move your bill. And just for clarity, Chair Leader, it's my understanding that you're going to move recommendation for this bill to pass and return to the Finance Committee.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. I'd like to move House File 1797, be recommended to pass and return to the Finance Committee.
Okay, the bill is before us. Would you like to share your bill?
Mr. Chair and members, House File 1797 is a bill that deals with the stimulus monies, and it's a bill that has to be passed and signed by the governor sometime soon, which would allow the Department of Transportation to spend. Have I got the right one? Right. It allows the authorization for the department to spend the stimulus monies. And really, what it does is basically authorization all the way through. It authorizes the department to seek all the funds they can. And I lost my notes in here. I must have left them.
All right.
I'm going to be okay. it authorizes the department to seek any additional funding, and it requires MnDOT to meet all federal requirements for the aid, that stimulus aid. And it establishes a percentage, 17%, that they can use for the program delivery. And the big important thing is it deals with the aeronautics program. It allows that the aeronautics projects are eligible for 100% funding. There's no match, because in present state law there's a match. So this waives that portion. I think that's been a concern of the aeronautics people. And it also mandates that there has to be a report to the legislature, and it expires in the year 2012, and that's when the stimulus monies run out. And initially when you came in, you had a layout of the stimulus, the way they have to match and use the stimulus funds. And that's basically the bill itself, Mr. Chair and members.
Any questions of Chair Leader from the committee?
And we do have someone in case from the department, in case we need someone to verify or check or testify.
Okay, Chair Leader, would you like to read? I'm sorry. Representative Holbrook.
Thank you, Chair Campion. Representative Leader, on page 1, line 17, the statement that the commissioner shall make every reasonable effort to seek and utilize all funds available. Are we telling the department that no matter what, they should go after money, even if it doesn't fit into our transportation plan, or if it's not something that we want to subsidize the operating on, or...
Chair Leader? Representative Holberg, are you presuming you're including the American Recovery and the stimulus money? Basically, this is addressed to that.
Representative Leader, I just think it's really broad language, and if we're not saying that going after everything that we approve of, you're saying going after all money available no matter what, basically.
Chair Leader?
Could we have Mr. Burris comment on that?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, members, the requirement under paragraph B that starts on 1.17 is broad, but would be I think one thing worth noting is that the authority under this language would not override what is already in place on as far as current law. So if there are projects that the department wanted to pursue that would be fundable under the federal stimulus package, it would require amendment to the STIP and would need to pursue a kind of similar process that's in place for project selection currently. The basic question, yes, it's a broad requirement for MnDOT to pursue funds.
Well, and
Representative Holbert?
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Burris, if you look at the paragraph above that, paragraph A, we're just giving them a blanket appropriation to spend all this money no matter what as well?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holbert, that's correct. It's a standing appropriation of any funds that that are available under the Act to the Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Burris, basically, if we support this bill, we're saying MnDOT go after all the money you can get no matter what, and you can spend it no matter what, because this is a standing appropriation of any money you can get your hands on under the stimulus package. Go for it and spend it.
Mr. Burris? Do you feel comfortable answering that, or should I defer to
in much nicer words, of course?
Mr. Chair, members, I would defer to the legislature on how they would want to, what words they would want to use in exhorting the commissioner to
pursue
federal funds.
And Mr. Chair, and Representative Holbert too. I believe you know this expires at the end of the stimulus. It's 2013, I see, but it's a 2-year. The stimulus money run out. It's only I don't know if they're going to keep dribbling them out or if they just give them initially one or two, and that's part of the problem.
Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg touched on it, but in line 1.10, it does say that they're designated for transportation purposes. So this would be to the Commissioner of Transportation for transportation purposes if you were running a little broader than that, which is where I thought the discussion was heading, but... I just thought I'd point that out too. The lines on 1.7 and 1.8, maybe it would be good to put that in there again and make every reasonable effort to seek and utilize funds for transportation purposes available under the AARA for transportation purposes might narrow it down quite a bit.
Mr. Chair, and my concern, and this goes to a larger policy issue, but we are building lots of things that we don't have the money to operate. Okay, so we are putting money into, you know, these systems, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in some instances, in some areas, they have built so much they're having trouble with money to maintain what they've already built. in some regions of the state. And so, I mean, if this is what the legislature's intent is to go after everything at all costs, and you can spend it however you want within the, you know, maybe that's what some legislators are looking for here. It just seems really, really broad to me.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly don't disagree with Representative Holberg, but I think Representative Weider, I think this is the language we need to be able to expend those funds, because you might remember Representative Holberg, Senator Murphy got that put in the transportation bill a couple of years ago, that we've got to approve all the funding that comes in. And so if we don't do that, here we'll sit this summer without these funds approved, and then this T-TAG group that Representative Weider and I were on when the bridge went down, we'll be meeting all the time approving all of these funds, and then and then the committee won't have any say over it. I think that's your intent, Representative Weider.
To keep it
as broad as we can, and just have the authority to spend the money as they come available. That's my understanding of the bill and why we need to get it done.
Chair Leader.
I have no comment.
All right.
Thank you.
Would you like to renew your motion, Chair Leader?
I don't know. I presume we don't have anyone to testify for or against, but Mr. Chair, I don't know.
Well, let me ask that question. Is there anyone who would like to testify for or against House File Number 1797? Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, before we vote here, let's just explore this just a little further, because I think Representative Holberg is raising a good point. If the assumption is we're going to build assets with these things, airports, dams, ports, roads, and bridges, well, that's one story. But if we're going to, particularly on the transit component, if we're going to build something that has an ongoing operating cost where it's just going to lay there, that could be quite another story. How far down that line do we want to push restricting that kind of a authorization before we run out of comfort here? You follow me?
Chair Leader?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I presume, though, with anything we dealt with the transit, it's been a slow mover because it has to go through basically some bonding, matching monies, and go through the whole process. I don't think it moves as fast as the highways, and that would be my suggestion.
Yeah. Representative?
Maybe to clarify this just a little further, there is a component of this that is just highways and, airports, highways, bridges, and so on. The transit component was $120 million or so. Does that go to the MnDOT commissioner for dispersal also?
Chair Leader?
It's under his jurisdiction, I presume, depending on where it would go, Representative Beard, for Mr. Chair and Representative Beard. Because normally, if it deals with metro area, I presume it would go through the Metro Council. We perhaps have someone in the audience that could answer that. I don't know.
It looks like Abby's coming.
We have.
Mr. Gray is still here. That's great.
Mr. Gray, would you like to comment? And for the record, if you introduce yourself and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT. And I'll talk to several issues that have been raised by a number of the members and try to bring some clarification to this. First and foremost, this bill is important because we need the appropriation authority in order to make the encumbrances and the commitments for these future federal funds. Secondly, I believe the language, while not consistent with the what I think the governor's bill was, is consistent in intent that we should make every reasonable effort. That was talked at some length. I think that we are trying to take advantage of what makes sense of any of the funds that are available for transportation investment purposes to the state of Minnesota. Thirdly, we've been careful to work with legislative staff and council to craft this such that it accomplishes two things. One is that it's multimodal, that it goes across all the modes. And second, to Representative Magnus's point, that it positions us to have appropriation authority to take action on AARA, or the stimulus funding, specific amount, whether or not the legislature is in session, knowing that this bill is contained or restricted to those stimulus monies that have been identified in the federal bill. And therefore, I think it would be clearly consistent with these, the transportation purpose highlighted. As to the transit funding, it's important to note that while some of the transit funds, in particular those that go to Greater Minnesota and some of the urban formula funds, there is a significant piece of money that goes directly to the MPO. In this case, it would be the Met Transit, I believe, will Met Council will be recipients directly of a portion of money that would not be covered here. They have their own spending authority and ability to utilize that money. I think that number is in the range of $70 million. So some of the transit monies that are referenced here, some will go directly to the MPO, in this case Met Council, and some, a more modest portion, as it turns out, will go to the Commission of Transportation.
Representative Magnus? DJ Fella?
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Representative Dipsy?
Thank you very much. Again, this is getting back to the fact that I'm new to this. You just made a comment that this is not consistent with the governor's proposal. Could you please highlight what's not consistent and what you meant by that?
Mr. Gray.
Mr. Chair and Representatives, there was a specific reference to line 1.17. The commissioner shall make every reasonable effort. I think that was a presumed language. I don't know if that was specifically talked about when the department worked with the with staff and with the bill that was jacketed and sent to the chairs. I'd have to check that with the chair leader or others, but I believe that that was language is in question, and I don't know that we addressed that specifically. I think the presumption is that we were seeking authority from the governor's perspective, the ability to actually make commitments against these future federal funds, and this appropriation authority is necessary to do that.
Representative Dixie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leader, could you explain to us how it differs from the governor's language or from the original language that you looked at and how it was changed?
Chair Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dixie. This was sent down by the department, by the governor. I had no initial contact with the governor, so I'm not aware of that.
Thank you, Representative Leader.
Any other questions? I did say earlier, is there anyone else who wants to testify for or against House File Number 1797? Seeing none, I believe that Chair Leader renews his motion recommending that this bill to pass and return to the Finance Committee. Is that so, Representative Chair Leader?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew that motion, be recommended passage and sent to the Finance Committee.
All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Now turn your attention to House File Number 994. Representative Leader, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move House File 994. She recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
Absolutely. And it's, it is before us, and it's my understanding, Chair Lou, that there is a fiscal note?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. If I could explain the bill and we'll get into the...
Please explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, basically this bill deals with a redundancy as far as the permit process for Minnesota-based trucking groups. And I think it's probably easier rather than me explaining. I have a gentleman here that could explain it better than I can. We have someone from the department in case we need it. Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Mr. Krogerman explain it.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and where you're from. And
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bob Krogerman. I'm with the Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association. Our members own and operate fuel delivery trucks to the local jobbers cooperatives. Operates straight trucks and transports delivering to farmers, construction sites, service stations. What the bill would repeal is the Minnesota Hazmat Registration Program. It asks who we are, where we are, what we deliver, and how many trucks we have. We also register under the federal Hazmat Registration Program, which asks the same things: who we are, where we are, how many trucks you have, what we haul. The fee on this one is like $275 for small businesses and $1,000 for large businesses. Minnesota requires all hazmat haulers to have a US DOT number which ask the same things, who we are, where we are, what we're hauling, number of trucks. There's no fee on this one. Last year, the legislature approved Minnesota participating in the Unified Carrier Registration Program. That asks who we are, where we are, and how many trucks we have. The fee on this one is $39 a truck, up to $3,800 for like 50 tractor and trailers. It counts a tractor and a trailer separately and has a separate fee on them. There's also a body of federal regulations that has the Steele-Hammond regulations that requires placarding, shipping papers, emergency response information, emergency response communication, and emergency response planning. This bill repeals none of that. It only repeals the state hazmat registration program. Now, when our folks are at roadside inspections or scale inspections or an audit at our office, the database used to determine who you are and all that are the federal databases, not the state database. So this is truly a redundant program, in our opinion. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, we're speaking about with the assumption we have an amendment, and he explained the bill basically with if the amendment were in effect, if it goes. But if you look at the bill, it has a lot of, it's a bigger, longer bill, and all these sections that are in the bill, if the committee so desires, I'm just going to get a feel of the committee, would move that amendment rather than one other amendment. All that would be left of the bill is basically the enactment clause, because it would repeal the rest of the bill, which is all the redundancy on the permits that he spoke about.
So you move adoption of A2?
A2 amendment, that's correct.
All those in favor of the adoption, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay.
And Mr. Chair,
amendment adopted.
Basically, the bill and its amendment, as was explained by Mr. Krogman.
Representative Hollenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the testimony. I'm feeling a little less queasy about this than I was when it was first introduced in my committee, but I still have a few questions about it. You know, I think the whole issue is around registration and some of the larger federal regulations that the testifier referred to, you know, I think come out of some efforts in the 1980s to make sure that the public was aware of hazardous materials going through communities and their impacts. And so I just have two quick questions. One is, what if we could have a very quick briefing on the history of these two requirements, the state and the federal, which came first? Did they come simultaneously? Is there a purpose that the state paperwork serves to fill in any gaps or holes, and particularly in terms of public involvement and public notification? There's a reason why we have this, and I guess I want to get a little bit more context for that.
Mr. Kleberman?
Mr. Chairman, Representative. Mr. Ritchie. Department of Transportation, I think, could better answer that than I.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Michael Ritchie. I'm a hazardous materials specialist with MnDOT's Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations.
And you heard Representative Hornstein's question, and would you please explain?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein. The brief history of the program is, in 1990, the first President Bush signed a law that gave the USDOT jurisdiction over all transport of hazardous materials interstate and intrastate. In that same legislation, Congress authorized states to participate in a uniform registration program for hazardous materials. Minnesota was one of four of the original states to join that program, and unfortunately 15 years later, almost 15 years later, Minnesota is still one of the four original states. Only three other states have joined what Congress envisioned as a uniform program, and they only joined for hazardous waste, not for hazardous materials. And so the program has really not done what Congress envisioned that it would do way back in 1990. Minnesota requires registration of hazmat haulers, hazmat shippers as a separate registration, and hazardous waste transporters are required to register under the current bill, under the current law.
Any follow-up, Representative Hornstein?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Mr. Ritchie, so does this legislation in any way reduce regulation of hazardous materials or the public's access to information about materials that are transported through their communities?
Mr. Ritchie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, it does not reduce our regulation of hazardous materials. Those regulations are adopted in Minnesota statutes 221.033, and so it doesn't affect that at all. It simply affects the registration program. If the program is eliminated, the databases of the USDOT as far as who is hauling which types of hazardous materials or which classes and divisions of hazardous materials is available to us. We can make data requests to the USDOT because, as Mr. Krogman pointed out, there are two separate registrations with the USDOT, and we can access both of those databases if we need to.
Last question then, Mr. Ritchie. If a member of the public wanted to access information about, or even a public or private entity wanted to access information about hazardous materials being transported through their community, would this legislation result in any delays in terms of them being able to access that data that may be available through the registration process?
Mr. Ritchie?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, they would have to make the data request to the USDOT, to one of the two separate agencies in USDOT who each require registration, because the data would not directly be available to the state. And one other point, since 9/11, MnDOT has held that information on the Minnesota program as sensitive security information, pursuant to Minnesota statutes, I think it's Chapter 13, just because we don't want to give out a roadmap to people of exactly who's got the hazmat and where they're located and all of that. And so if we had a question from state or county county government, local government, the mayor, police chief, we've had questions, for instance, from tribal governments about what hazmat is in their area and the whole business, we would provide it to them, but we have held it as sensitive security information.
Well, one last statement then, Mr. Chair, if I may. I think this raises some larger and disturbing issues that are beyond this bill, you know, related to the community's right to know. And it's probably a discussion for a different time and place, but maybe we need to consider some an examination of some of those laws that were passed in the 1980s. And it's in new information to me that perhaps some of those hard-fought efforts may have been compromised, you know, in the name of security, which is, I think, obviously an important consideration that we didn't have in the 1980s, perhaps to the extent that we have now. But I just want to make sure that communities and workers still have the right to know the hazardous materials that are in their midst and their communities. But I'm satisfied that this bill doesn't compromise that might have been compromised in other ways already.
Thank you. Representative Wilkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the testifier, I have two questions. First of all, just to be very clear, is there any information that the state will not have access to by doing away with the state registration and going to just the federal registration?
Mr. Richard, Representative Wilkie, the one thing that the state would not have is a specific file to show who is hauling the hazardous materials in Minnesota.
Follow up, Mr. Wilkie? Representative Wilkie?
Mr. Chair and the testifier, what does that mean? Can you tell us? I mean, if you're saying that we won't have a file, are you just saying we wouldn't have a paper from that hauler in a file in the state, but we'd still be able to get that information from the federal Department of Transportation?
Mr. Wilkie.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkie, the one advantage that the program has right now is that it requires the registration of any carrier that is hauling hazardous materials in Minnesota. The federal registration programs can tell us which Minnesota carriers are hauling hazmat, but the federal registration programs cannot tell us which carriers from another state are hauling those things in Minnesota. So that's the possibly the one thing that the Minnesota participating in the uniform program has that you could not get from the federal DOT.
Representative Wilkie, follow up.
And I wanted to ask another question, and this is my third, but I thought when we were discussing this before, when the testimony was given before, that you said interstate and intrastate. And so now you're just saying it's intrastate information, but not interstate information.
Mr. Wilkie? Representative Wilkie, the uniform program as it exists right now is still is a program that requires the registration of an interstate carrier who is going to haul hazardous materials in or through Minnesota. In addition to requiring the registration of hazmat carriers and hazmat shippers based in Minnesota. And so if a carrier, let's say from Ohio, indicated and registered with Ohio as a base state under the existing program, one of the things that carrier would have to do is tell Ohio which other states is he going to operate in. And that would be including telling that carrier that he's going to be in Minnesota. And so the way it would work right now and the way it does under the uniform program is that any carrier that is going to operate in Minnesota, regardless of where they are based, if they're going to operate in Minnesota, they have to be registered in this program either through Minnesota or through one of the other three base states. And then we would have a report. We would have a list of who those carriers are.
Representative Morgan.
Alex, you have a follow-up? Just one final question. This is getting off that subject. My last question is just, in any way does repealing this hamper our ability to get information in a timely manner if anything was to occur in the state of Minnesota where we had access to information in an emergency?
Mr. Wilkie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilkie, if we were going to ask the federal DOT for their databases, one of those databases is pretty much available online for us. The second federal database, it would be literally the requirement to wait until the following Monday morning and make a data request to them.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leader, the amendment to the bill, did we just... Are we just now, as your bill is amending, repealing the registration and not the fee? Is there still a fee that's going to be charged? What I'm not exactly sure what this amendment did to the
Chair Leader. Okay. Mr. Klobner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch the question.
Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, I'm not exactly sure what the amendment did. It appears that we've taken away the registration, but did we also take away the fee? Are people still going to be paying the fee? I know there was some concern expressed about that from the Department.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Klobman.
Representative, it would repeal the entire program and would take away the fee.
Representative Morgan, follow up.
I guess the question is, as I understand it, that fee, Mr. Chair, was going towards training of teams that would have to respond to hazmat issues. What other options are in place, and where does the Department of Public Safety, have you had a conversation with them about how they're going to pay for that training that had been funded through this fee?
Mr. Brockman, or
Chairman, Representative, as I understand it from conversations with the Department of Transportation, and Mr. Kerr from Public Safety will address this, the fee raises about $220,000. That all goes into the general fund. There is appropriation back to the Department of Transportation of approximately $120,000 to run this program. There is about $30,000 paid out to the other three or four participating base states. The remainder of $60,000 or $70,000 is in the general fund and I guess appropriated to public safety for their purposes. I don't know that it is dedicated to the hazmat training. John, you may.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Kerr. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. To the question, Representative, when the State Regional Hazardous Materials Team Program was established back in 1992, simultaneously, if you will, there were two fees that were established, both of which are deposited into the general fund, and the intent was, and I was not involved with the legislation, but my understanding is that the intent was that the two fees combined would offset at least a significant chunk of the program's cost. We do not receive the MnDOT fee, as has been testified. Those fees simply deposit in the general fund, and totally separate from that, our agency receives an appropriation for the regional hazardous materials program. The other fee that's collected is the fee that we levy on hazmat facilities in the state.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mason.
Just want to clarify a couple of things. If there's a truck based in Minnesota, there's an accident in my community, would that truck driver have the information of what's inside that truck to provide, say our volunteer firemen, so they would know how to deal with that?
Mr. Krogman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes. That information would be basically on the truck. There'd be the placard there to say what was in the tank. In the cab, there's shipping papers. There's an emergency response phone number also there. There's an emergency response plan and a company that has to be under contract. So that information would be at the scene. If it were further information necessary, I guess they would access the federal database. It's accessible online. I can do it from my office. This would not add to it. In fact, I don't know, for example, that I could access this database. So the information is readily available.
That would be true both for
Representative Mason.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. That would be true both for trucks based in Minnesota and trucks based, say, North Dakota or Iowa.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that is true. And a truck coming into Minnesota from Iowa, for example, delivering farm fuels, would have to be placarded. Would have to have the shipping papers, would have to have the emergency response phone number. It also would have to be registered under the federal hazmat registration. It also have to have, since it's going interstate, have to have a US DOT number, and would also be part of the Unified Carrier Registration Program because Iowa is one of the states involved.
One more question. What was the information that you said you couldn't get till Monday morning? There was
Mr. Croft.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I didn't say that. Mr. Ritchie did.
Okay.
Representative,
Mr. Chair, Representative, there are currently two federal registrations, as Mr. Krogman referred to. One is with, they're each with different branches, different sections in the U.S. DOT. The hazmat registration program run by the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration is where they have to register and pay a fee. They have to indicate generally what types of hazardous materials they're hauling, but not specifically what types of hazardous materials hauling. That is one that is not directly accessible to a trooper in his car or a firefighter in his car. Plus, it won't give you a lot of specific information about what they're hauling because its registration criteria are just on specific categories of materials, not on the actual specific materials a company hauls. The U.S. DOT Federal Motor Carrier Safety Database, which has no registration fee with it, does indicate, based on the federal, on the trucking company's registration, each class or division of hazardous materials they haul. Also whether they haul hazardous waste or not. So you'd have more data available from that database, which is, again, online for those state patrol or emergency responders.
A follow-up, Representative Mason?
No, that'll be all.
Any other questions? Oh, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you. Sorry, one last one here because, Mr. Chair, and maybe it's for Mr. Ritchie, but any of the
the testifiers from the agencies. Representative,
Representative Hornstein, yes. If I might have you ask your question quickly, because it's my understanding that no.
Representative Welty surfaced an answer to a question I just want to get a little clarity on. He's in response to a question. It was noted that the one change here would be the state not necessarily having, or the public not having access to the question who is handling the particular waste. Did I hear that correctly, or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, under the current registration program as it exists, any company hauling hazardous materials or hazardous waste, regardless of what state they're based in, has to report to Minnesota that they are, through the program, hauling hazardous materials in that particular, in our state. Okay? That is one of the things we cannot get from the Federal Motor Carrier Database. They can tell us, anybody that's doing it in Minnesota that's based in Minnesota, but they cannot tell us who in Wisconsin is hauling hazmat in Minnesota. They don't have that in their database.
And so, through this registration that we're potentially eliminating here, you would have that information as opposed to the Fed.
Mr. Ritchie?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Representative Hornstein?
Let's say, okay, anhydrous ammonia is being hauled by BNSF through Representative Welty District, and would Representative Welty then can get information from MnDOT about who is, through this permitting process, who is handling, who is hauling or handling that waste?
Under the existing, Mr. Chairman, Representative Welty, under the existing program, yes. Truckers and railroads are both required to report that they're hauling hazardous material, and they're required to tell us which classes or divisions of hazardous material they're hauling in Minnesota.
Are we eliminating any aspect of that protocol in this bill?
Mr. Ritchie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein, if we eliminate the program, that's one of the things that we will not have in the Minnesota, that we won't have a Minnesota database.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful and concerning.
Any other questions? Seeing none.
Actually,
Representative Beard.
Yes, now I do, because I'm not certain which way we're going. Maybe Mr. Krug, maybe you can speak to this. On any given day, because I've heard about classifications, we hear somebody's registered, so we know what classification stuff there is. But I think Representative Horsing is asking about is, if we know a train is coming across the bridge at the cross tomorrow afternoon at 6 o'clock. Hauling anhydrous ammonia, do we know that from the Minnesota database, that specific trip at that specific time?
Mr. Krugman?
Or do we just know that BN handles anhydrous ammonia through the state?
Wanted to testify. Is this the last question?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, you wouldn't know a specific time that train was coming through. That railroad would register as a hazmat carrier. How would you know what was on that train as the placards on the cars?
So, if a truck came in from, say, Nebraska or some state that's not in the compact, he was running down Interstate 80 hauling sulfuric acid or something, would we know specifically that it was on the road at that time? Or would we just know because they bought a permit somewhere registered with USDOT or whoever that they were going to haul acid through the state from time to time?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I assume you meant Interstate 90.
90, I said what I said.
And on 90... The tank would be placarded, shipping papers in the vehicle, emergency response in the vehicle, and that truck would be registered as under the USDOT program, USDOT number, and as a federal hazmat hauler.
But under current law right now that we haven't repealed yet, would we know anything different or any more timely information that they would be coming past Sioux Falls at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, for instance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, in my opinion, no.
Maybe Mr. Ritchie has something to say to that.
Mr. Chairman, so, Representative Beard.
If I might, we really do have to end unless there's another question. If you're not ready.
It's important to hear that one detailed answer, then I'm ready to vote.
Okay, you didn't hear it.
From Mr. Ritchie, I didn't.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, very, very quickly, after 9/11, there was the legislation in Congress proposed that never went anywhere. to require reporting, pre-reporting of movements of hazardous material. It never went anywhere because it's there's 1.2 million movements a day in the United States, and there is really no pre-notification required for hazardous materials, either inter or intrastate, by this program or by any of the federal programs.
Okay. So, because there's probably more questions, Chairleader, do you think it would be appropriate for us just to lay this over? Because I want to make sure that I would like for you to lay this over if possible.
I didn't.
Okay, we're going to lay it over. Meeting adjourned.